Blog Talk Radio.
Healing rain is coming down. It's coming nearer to this old town. Rich and poor, weak and strong. It's bringing mercy. It won't be long. Healing rain is coming down. It's coming closer to the lost and found. Tears of joy and tears of shame are washed forever in Jesus' name.
Good morning and welcome to this very special edition of The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. My name is Randy L. Noble. We are speaking hope and freedom this morning to Rahana Jabari. Yesterday was a nightmare day for Rahana, her mother, and many, many of the human rights activists that are speaking out for her freedom. Just to mention a name, Shabnam Asadali, Shadi Paveh, Nazanin Afshinjam, Shiva Mahabi, many, many more who have dedicated their busy lives to petitioning for Rahana. Over 190,000 signatures, and we need more. Yesterday, we got a message, all of us, that Rahana was destined to be executed. I remember waking up. I had a program yesterday. I saw that, and I was just shocked, because her case was still pending under review since her execution had been postponed since back in April. And back in April, human rights people, myself included, had petitioned, had been speaking out a lot and praying, most importantly, for Rahana. And we were overjoyed back in April that the execution had been postponed, although we realized the Iranian regime, how deceitful and evil they are, they could change it in a minute. We also remember back in April when some of the signatures to her petition had mysteriously disappeared, and most of us suspected that the Iranian regime was at work trimming off the signatures to make it appear that Rahana didn't have much support. So this has been a battle, and yesterday most of us braced for the worst, and I want to read to you just how this happened yesterday. And read the posting and the comments about what took place yesterday for Rahana Jabari. This is from her mother, Sholeh Parkravan, who wrote on Facebook, and I'm going to read you her entire comments, what she said yesterday. She said, Sholeh said, "Today, around noon, Rahana called me. She said they have called me out for execution. I said, that's impossible. Your lawyer was there yesterday, and your case is still at court. I don't know whether to believe you or them. I said, believe me. I am telling you what the law courts are telling me. It's up to you who to believe. She called again around 2 p.m. She says, dear mom, the law courts, whoever they are, have lied to you, a helpless woman. I am currently handcuffed, and there is a car waiting outside to take me for the execution of my sentence. The reason I have been able to call you is because the guard who is taking care of me felt sorry and couldn't take me without letting me say goodbye to you. Goodbye, dear mom. They are taking me to Rajay Shahar prison. All of my pains will finish early tomorrow morning. I'm sorry I cannot lessen your pain. Be patient. We believe in life after death. I'll see you in the next world, and I will never leave you again, because being separated from you is the most difficult thing to do in the world. Well, Sholi Pakravan wrote, I made so many phone calls, I called anyone and everyone you could think of, friends and acquaintances. I could not believe they were going to execute this death sentence without informing us while her case is being reviewed. But my daughter is on her way to face her uncertain death. Sholi Pakravan contacted the prison. Someone answered the phone and confirmed that Rehana was there and that her name was on the list. Sholi screamed in agony and asked what to do. And this is what they told Rehana's mother. I want you to hear this. This cold, uncompassionate group, they told her to come tomorrow morning to collect her body. It was one of the most difficult days for me. I have been following this case, for the last year. And my good friend Shadi came on my program, The Cross in the Desert. We talk about our human rights activities. And I remember Shadi sharing with me a story that when they were pressuring Rehana and just cruelly torturing her because she had sent out many letters about her case, and Shadi had received these letters and had translated them. Because they knew that she was contacting the social media with her case, they began to deal out, psychological and physical kinds of torture to her. They removed her from her jail cell, put her in the quarter, made her sleep on the hard floor. They would put her in the same cell with cancer patients and AIDS patients. They were doing everything they could to stop her. But Rehana is very strong, and she has faced this unbelievable situation of suffering for the last six or more years in prison. I want you to hear from Amnesty International what they said about Rehana's case. This is Hasibi Haji Sakroloi. He is a Middle East and North Africa Deputy Director at Amnesty International. He says this abhorrent execution must not be allowed to take place, particularly when there are serious doubts about the circumstances of the killing. Instead of continuing to execute people, authorities in Iran should reform their judicial system, which dangerously relies on processes which fail to meet international law and standards for fair trial. International human rights standards, people charged with crimes punishable by death, are entitled to the strictest observance of all fair trial guarantees. And I heartily agree. I want you to hear Rehana's side of the story. I'm going to play this 4.5-minute soundbite. It's excellent. It details what Rehana is saying about her case. If you've never heard it, I want you to hear it right now on The Cross in the Desert.
My name is Rehana Jabari. I am 26, Iranian, and I've been living in prison where I've been confined for years, having nightmares of being executed at any point of time. Days pass by and my fear grows on a daily basis as I stand waiting to be strangled with a rope around my neck. If and only if I had not defended myself, I would have been a victim of rape. I wish that damn day did not exist in my life, the day that destroyed both my life and I was talking and laughing with my friend over the phone when two guys who must have overheard me talk about decoration with my friend approached me. When I wanted to leave the ice cream shop, those two guys came towards me and asked if I could redecorate their offices. We agreed and exchanged telephone numbers. A few days after, Mortaza's friend called me to visit his office to change the decoration regarding to the contract already agreed upon before. We set an appointment and I appeared on the day. I was walking along the way when Mortaza on his car stopped in front of me and insisted to give me a ride. His friend was sitting in the car too. I got in the car. I wish I never did. They picked me up and drove me somewhere I didn't know. I was scared. Mortaza stopped in front of a pharmacy. He bought some stuff there and came back with a little plastic bag in his hand. I did not know what he bought. Inside the building was very dirty, as if nobody had lived there for years. Mr. Shafi did not come inside. I was terrified to close the door behind me. But Mortis asked me to close the door. He asked me to take off my scarf. I didn't do it. He approached me and tried to touch me, but I didn't let him. He put his arms around my waist. I ran away. He got angry and said that I cannot disobey his desire. He had a knife with me. In a second when he turned his head back to me, I stabbed him in the back. He was still coming to me more angrily. He grappled me, but I could free myself from his hands. While I was running through the door, Mr. Sheikhi came in. He got into a fight with Mortaza. I did not know what was going on between them. He went to the kitchen table and took some documents from there. I ran away trying to get lost in the city. I got involved in a terrible incident. I later noticed from evidence that the plastic bag he had at the pharmacy contained condom and anesthetic, and drawing inference from the items, liquid containing anesthetic in the condoms all show they wanted to rape me. I just defended myself. In all the court sessions, I had claimed that I am innocent, and I continue to maintain that position. I did not kill Mortaza, even though I stabbed him to free myself. I do not know the extent of attack by the other man and what informed his intention. Maybe to suppress evidence. The time for the court's judgment came, and the court's verdict did not exculpate me and subsequently sentenced me to death. Since my conviction 7 years ago, I am still on the death row. The court accepts neither my claim nor my lawyer's defense. I have already declared in my last defense that I am an ordinary girl who did not allow violation of her dignity. I am a designer. I work as a designer, and in line with my work, I entered into a contract with them, and they took me to the place where I believed reasonably that I was going to do my professional job. I never had any foreseeable hindsight of their intention, as that had never happened to me before. The family of the deceased, the head of the judiciary, and the supreme leader can only save me from death. I do not deserve to die. Death is not for me. Please save me.
A plea from Rohana to please save me. That's her side of the story. The man that entered the room right at the time she was leaving, it's been hypothesized that he is the one that finished killing her attacker and that she is being framed. There is so much evidence to the contrary that this has not been a fair trial. This has been a sham. This has been a circus, a kangaroo court against Rohana. And you ask yourself, why won't they believe her story? 6 months ago, I wrote a blog called Rohana Jabari, The Crime of Self-Defense, and I believe that what I'm writing here in this blog has a lot to say for the reasons why Rohana's story is not being believed. Basically, it's because she's a woman. And I want you to hear what I have to say in this blog. I'm going to take the time to read it to you. Rohana Jabari, The Crime of Self-Defense. Quote, I have not seen anyone more deficient in intelligence and religion than you. A cautious, sensible man could be led astray by you. Is not the evidence of two women equal to the witness of one man? That's from the Hadith, Volume 1, Book 6, Number 301. During the 2012 presidential election, liberals accused conservatives of suppressing the rights of women. The common phrase that was used to describe their discrimination was the hot-button term entitled The War on Women. I believe there is a real war on women that has nothing to do with the continuous political debate being waged between conservatives and liberals. The real war on women transcends the political arena here in America. The real war is being waged every second of every day against women in Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Nigeria, Saudi Arabia, and the rest of the Middle East. This war has many scars, many casualties, many innocent victims, a deliberate hatred and discrimination against women. Recently, I came across an article on the internet, where else? It was a blatant statement made by an unidentified Saudi professor who didn't have the balls to mention his name, I might add. The Saudi professor said, quote, "If a woman gets raped walking in public alone, then she herself is at fault. She is only seducing men by her presence. She should have stayed home like a Muslim woman." Women all over the world should be outraged by this sexist and discriminatory statement. As of yet, I still don't hear any liberal women rising up to defend these women's rights in the Middle East. Adding insult to injury, this man is a professor at a university in Saudi Arabia. In the Islamic world, women are treated like possessions, like property, and are considered little more than second-class citizens. They are not allowed to travel alone and must obtain special permission from their husbands if they want to leave the country. When you understand the male mindset against women in the Middle East, then you can understand why a young 26-year-old girl is on death row in Iran. Her name is Rahana Jabari. Her crime is self-defense. In 2007, Mortazeya Abdullah Sarbandi, identified as a former intelligence agent in Iran, contacted Rahana and asked her to do some work in redesigning his office. According to Rahana's testimony, she was driven to his apartment. Once inside the apartment, Sarbandi began to attack her, and Rahana did what any normal woman would do who is being sexually assaulted. She defended herself. In the struggle, Rahana found a kitchen knife and stabbed Sarbandi. Later, he died of his injuries. The trial of Rahana has been a travesty of justice, a perversion of the true judicial process. She was convicted of murder, coerced under pressure to confess, and sentenced to hang. Subsequent evidence of drinks laced with drugs demonstrated that Sarbandi had the whole scenario planned from start to finish, and yet this vital evidence was suppressed, along with many other facts in the case that would have easily exonerated Rahana, in any other criminal court. The simple question to be asked is, why wasn't Rahana's testimony of the events accepted by the Iranian court? Well, I think the answer lies in the view of women, according to teachings of Islam in Iran and all across the Middle East. In the Hadith, the teachings and sayings of the Prophet Muhammad, not contained in the Quran, there is an interesting story. Once Allah's apostle went out to Masula to offer the prayer. There he passed by the woman and said, "O women, give alms, as I have seen that the majority of the dwellers of hellfire were you." They asked, "Why is it so, Allah's apostle?" He replied, "You curse frequently and are ungrateful to your husbands. I have not seen anyone more deficient in intelligence and religion than you." The women asked, "O Allah's apostle, what is deficient in our intelligence and religion?" He said, "Is not the evidence of two women equal to the witness of one man?" They replied in the affirmative. He said, "This is the deficiency in her intelligence. Isn't it true that a woman can neither pray nor fast during her menses?" The women replied in the affirmative. He said, "This is the deficiency in her religion." In another hadith, the Prophet Muhammad was given the news that the people of Persia had made the daughter of Khosrow their queen, to which he replied, quote, "Never will succeed such a nation that makes a woman their ruler." Well, that's from Volume 9, Book 88, Number 21, Hadith. When considering the weight of this evidence, it is easy now to understand why Rahana's version of the crime was not accepted. She is a woman. Her evidence is less than half that of a man's. She is deficient in intelligence and in her religion. I know exactly what I speak of. Every day I talk with my dear Iranian friends, and they share with me story after story of the oppression and discrimination of women in Iran. Rahana faces execution in Iran for the crime of self-defense. You ask any woman who has been raped, and they will tell you in tears of how the scars and humiliation of this disgusting crime has traumatized their lives forever. Rahana has spent the last 6 years of her life behind bars for doing what any normal woman does when sexually assaulted. It is time for women, regardless of their political orientation or religion, to stand up and be a voice for the oppressed women in the Middle East. This is where the real war on women is being waged. Please join me and be their voice. This is what I believe is the underlining reason why Rahana's side of the story, her version of the events, is not being accepted. It's because the view of women in Islam, in Iran, and in the Middle East. And these are quotes from the Hadith. I know that some Muslims would disagree with that, but nonetheless, these are official quotes. And the way women are treated in Iran really backs up what is taught in the Hadith. Well, yesterday when I heard about Rahana, I just went to prayer, crying out to God for her. And I rely on what the Bible teaches. I love the Psalms. They are the songs of David in the Old Testament. You can hear the passion. David would cry out and lament about his circumstances and also praise for what God was doing in his life. And I thought of Rahana, and I love the Psalms when I pray, and I was thinking of Psalm number 3. O Lord, it says, I have so many enemies. So many are against me. So many are saying God will never rescue him. But you, O Lord, are a shield around me. You are my glory, the one who holds my head high. I cried out to the Lord, and he answered me from his holy mountain. I lay down and slept. Yet I woke up in safety, for the Lord was watching over me. I am not afraid of 10,000 enemies who surround me on every side. When I heard later on at work, a few hours later, that Rahana's execution had been postponed, I just rejoiced, because I know when I pray that God is hearing my prayers. I know that he will answer them. I know that he is answering all of our prayers, and I really believe when I read something like Psalm 3 that the Lord was surrounding Rahana with his favor, with his providence, and with his protection. And reading on, the Psalms are wonderful laments, crying out for justice. Psalm 17, verse 1, David says, O Lord, hear my plea for justice. Listen to my cry for help. Pay attention to my prayer. And in Psalm 18, my favorite, I love you, Lord. You are my strength. The Lord is my rock, my fortress, and my Savior. My God is my rock, in whom I find protection. I want you to hear this beautiful song by Chris Tomlin talking about God as our deliverer, and he has delivered Rahana from a certain execution. Let's listen. song, My Deliverer, by Chris Tomlin. What I would like you to do is please go to my Facebook page, and you can just scroll down, and you will see the petition there for Rahana. This fight is not over. It's far from over. And our great God and Deliverer has spared Rahana's life, but we need to continue speaking out and praying for her and signing petitions. This is a fight for her life. And in her statement, she said, in that clip I played for you, please save me. We have a responsibility to be her voice, to be a voice for her freedom. So I urge you to please continue praying for her and signing the petition on the pages that you see on my Facebook. I appreciate so much for you spending time with me this morning on this very special show of being a voice for Rahana. I will keep you updated about what's happening in her situation. Have a great week. God bless you, and thank you for being my guest on the cross in the desert.
Healing rain is coming down, it's coming nearer to this old town, to this old town. Rich and poor, weak and strong, it's bringing mercy, it won't be long.